This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of July, 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 26th of July, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now we start with the announcements and with what's on, and a couple of items. Winchester Cathedral lunchtime concerts. Next Tuesday, the 30th of July at 1 p.m, a concert by Susan Welland, soprano, and Eunice Pike on piano. And the following Tuesday, the 6th of August at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime concert by Arthur Parks on cello and piano. Both are free with retiring collections. And at the Theatre Royal, Anything Goes is playing until the 31st of July at 7:30 p.m, and that's by the Hampshire Youth Theatre Group. For more details from the Theatre Royal, contact the box office on 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. The lighting up time ends Friday the 26th of July at 5:23 a.m. and begins at 9:01 p.m. And on Wednesday the 31st of July, it ends at 5:30 a.m. and begins at 8:54 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. Now the main headlines this week: Marching with Pride, Cheers and Applause on Troops Return, Full Steam Ahead with Council Homes, and Go Ahead for Bar End Waste Transfer Station. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Is Marching with Pride. With bayonets fixed, drums beating and colours flying, the Tigers were given a hero's welcome on their return to Hampshire. Around 160 troops from the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, nicknamed the Tigers, marched proudly through Winchester past pavements swarming with well-wishers waving Union flags, drawing cheers and unending applause as they streamed past. The soldiers were exercising the right of freedom of entry, a privilege which means some regiments can parade through the city. Setting off from Peninsula Barracks, they marched in the blazing sun down the High Street to the Broadway. But the heat will be nothing new to them. They have been deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq on numerous tours of duty, and they are set to return to Afghanistan as part of the 20th Armoured Brigade, which has been handed responsibility for bringing operations to a close in the country. The troops, accompanied by the band of the Corps of Royal Engineers, halted in front of the Guildhall, ready for inspection, with Dame Mary Fagan, Hampshire's Lord Lieutenant, taking the salute. After a short speech from the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, Colonel Charlie Sykes, former commanding officer of the 1st Battalion, Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, told the crowd that Winchester had been the best of the 7 parades the Tigers had performed over the past 10 years. He added, "They are ordinary people who have been trained and have the ethos to do extraordinary things, and on that basis we should applaud them." After the march, Private Sam Rowe, 21, from Sholing, Southampton, said, "This is the closest parade to my home, and it was a great day. My grandparents came to see me in it, so it was really nice." Private Ollie Killeen, 21, a schoolmate of Sam's from their time at Weston Park Boys' School in Southampton, added, "Today was great, and my family are here. It was also great to see the veterans out here too. It does make you feel proud." And there are a lot of photographs, mainly of the troops marching, obviously, with their desert fatigues rather than normal uniforms, and they have machine guns rather than sort of rifles like you would imagine. Great pictures of them going past the Guildhall, the whole place clear except for the soldiers. Pictures of families with all their children up on their shoulders, little blonde children waiting for them to pass by. Pictures of everyone in their summery dresses and hats, smiling, beaming, waving Union Jacks. Lots of children, which is lovely to see, all waiting, smiling. And the mayor dressed in all their finery and kit and the blue councillors and dignitaries. Then we've got the band of the Royal Engineers. Now, they are in the wonderful red coats with their gold belts and what looks like bearskin hats, which I don't envy them in the heat of that day. And down to the veterans in their blue blazers and their berets, again, all beaming, waving their flags. And finally, Mary Fagan in a very stylish yellow hat, inspecting the troops, who look extremely smart and proud. And that's the best I can do on the pictures. Over to you, Graham.
Another 2 inches to the right and I'd have been in one of these photographs. Full steam ahead on council homes. Civic chiefs are turning up the heat on plans to build council homes in Winchester, despite several early setbacks. Housing boss Tony Coates said the City Council aimed to complete 200 of the 300 house programme by 2017. The original plan was for 300 homes over 10 years when it was announced in 2011, but Cabinet is increasing the urgency. It comes as it faces opposition from residents on several sites, including Abbots Barton and Westman Road Week, while it has also scrapped a 15-home development in Millen Road after residents complained about plans to demolish existing houses to free up space. But councillors called for a review of the programme at a full meeting last week, citing slow progress and problems with consultation. Councillor Chris Pine said, "It seems to me it was about 2.5 years ago when George Beckett said we would build 300 houses and we were promised there would be a total review of the programme in the future. I think this is long overdue." Councillor Jim Maynard added, "Does Cabinet recognise the mistakes it has made to date in building council housing and have they learned from those mistakes?" Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said they continue to support the programme, but that the council should work with housing associations more. She said, "We're all aware that there are problems with several of the sites on our list, and it may be that more drop out. Housing need is increasing, and housing associations can help us fill the need. I think it's important to continue to show we want to work with them, and we are a great prospect for the future." Council leader Keith Wood said, "I think we've had a good debate on this, but it emphasises the problems with consultation. You can do it one way or another way, and there will still be protests." He added, "I think we do need a review. I will be happy to see if we can improve it, and over the summer months I will make some progress on that." The council also rubber-stamped plans to use developers' contributions to support the programme and help other housing associations provide affordable homes.
Go ahead for Bar End Waste Transfer Station. Controversial plans to recycle builders' waste in Winchester have got the green light despite objections. The County Council's Regulatory Committee approved a scheme for a new waste transfer station at Barfield Close on the Bar End Industrial Estate. But the newest homes in Domham Road and Bar End Road are just 12 metres from the site. Residents' concerns include increased noise, dust and extra lorries. The site is also sensitive because it is close to the River Itchen, historic buildings at Winchester College and Wolvesey Castle, and within 65 metres of South Downs National Park. However, the site is already used as a scrapyard despite being in the middle of a residential area. In addition to granting permission for a new depot for builders' waste, councillors last Wednesday approved continued use of the site to recycle metal, paper, cardboard and plastic. Councillor Fiona Mather, who represents the area, urged the committee to reject the proposals. The Tory county councillor said it was a totally inappropriate location for this sort of operation. The new depot will mean an extra 10,000 tonnes of builders' waste will be recycled at the site on top of the 15,000 tonnes it already handles. And there will be 12 extra heavy goods vehicles visiting per day, making 27 in total. Around 20 residents wrote letters of objection to the County Council. The site is next to the recently finished City Council depot to be operated by its contractor, BIFFA. Councillor Maeder said she was concerned noise and disruption from both sites would mean locals could no longer enjoy their gardens. However, Phil Tidridge, City Council Scientific Officer, said although there would be some noise from the new depot, it would not be seriously detrimental. The physical sorting of the waste will take place inside a new soundproof building with HGVs reversing into it. There will be no concrete crushing on the site. Other measures to reduce noise include an acoustic wall. Noise levels will be regularly monitored with a maximum permitted level of 45 decibels, the meeting was told.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Dean, Joy Dean, who died peacefully on the 22nd of July, aged 90. Evans, Neil Vivian Evans, who was the proprietor of Viking Garages, who died on the 19th of July after a short illness, aged 80. Henstredge, Stanley Herbert Henstredge, died aged 81. Hyde, Mary Hyde, died on the 19th of July. Holder, Christopher Robin Holder, died on the 14th of July at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. Lilyfield, Adrian Arthur Lilyfield, formerly of Magdalen Mews, aged 88. Matthews, Patricia Muriel Matthews, died peacefully in Dorchester Hospital on the 6th of July. O'Shaughnessy, Peter O'Shaughnessy, died on the 17th of July, aged 89. Powell, Noel Anthony Powell, died unexpectedly on the 20th of July, aged 78. Sanderson, Bessie Sanderson, who died at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 84. Trickle, Gilbert Trickle, known as Sam, died on the 14th of July, aged 82. And West, Frederick John West, died peacefully on the 16th of July, aged 83. You know, Albie, Christian comment, please.
Christian comment this week, What's in a Name? Rather a Lot as It Happens, by Rosemary A. Baker. And it comes before the name of the new royal baby was announced. The new heir to the throne has been born. Kate and William have a son, but the royal babe as yet does not have a name. The bookies are taking bets. George and James seem to be the favourites. Arthur, Henry and Edward have been suggested. Richard is a possibility, as is Alexander or John. Stephen doesn't seem to be likely. Actually, we don't seem to have many kings' names if you take out Charles and William and rule out the pre-Normans. The names of British kings seem to be like popes in the fact that they are repeated over and over again. Of course, they don't have to use their real Christian names when they come to the throne. The Queen's father was called Albert, and yet chose to be George VI when he came to the throne. Popes traditionally choose their name when elected. Choosing a name for a new baby is an important task. It can be helpful for a child or a hindrance, and with some names, as when parents choose a whole football team, a veritable embarrassment. According to Mumsnet, the areas to be considered are uniqueness, relatives and friends, ancestry and heritage, meaning, including in other languages, initials and nicknames, and then pitfalls. After the shortlist comes the tricky part, working out how your chosen name goes with middle names and surname, avoiding alliteration and rhyming. What a responsibility. Last but not least, what if the child turns out not to like their name? But then they can always change it by deed poll. We British don't usually set such great store by the meaning of names. In the Bible, it was common for names to tell something of the child's birth or their parents' hopes for them, as well as their role or destiny. Changing names meant that lives were about to be changed, usually dramatically, for a new role or lifestyle. Simon had his name changed by Jesus to Peter, which meant rock, the rock on which he wanted to build his church. Saul had his name changed from that of a mighty king to Paul, meaning small, after his conversion experience, perhaps to remind him of his insignificance in that great scheme of things. We call our first names Christian names because they tell us of our faith and are bestowed on us at baptism. We believe as Christians that God knows us each by name and that we are called by him. The name Jesus means salvation, and as Christians we believe it is by this name, the name of Jesus, that we are saved from our sins.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this is from Tony Wills, and it's the prehistory of cities, Abbey Mill. Sir, your recent articles on Hugh Fernley Whittingstall's plan for the Abbey Mill in Colebrook Street says it had been in office for 40 years. It could be more. Some 56 years ago, in September 1957, I started my career as a civil engineer there with Riley and Neat Limited, electrical and civil engineers. They occupied offices in Jewry Street prior to the Abbey Mill, and the firm was sold around 1962. Its business was the design and construction of high and low voltage overhead power lines and observation towers, and it was a well-respected and successful company. In 1960, an associate company, Preformed Line Products Limited, was established in Andover to make line fittings, still used today. Tony Wills, Cowes Lane, Warsash, Southampton.
Still outstanding, whatever they say, says Bernard Tucker of Basingstoke Road, Old Alsford. Sir, I was involved in education for nearly 40 years and have been a governor of Perrins Academy, New Alsford, for the last 10 years. My youngest son left there 3 years ago for Peter Simmons and university. Because of these 10 years, including interviewing new teachers, sitting in on lessons, attending English department meetings, I think I can claim to know a bit about the school. I can assure your readers that whatever Ofsted says, Perrins remains outstanding. It has a first-rate senior leadership team, excellent and hard-working teachers, and above all, an ethos which is evident to all who visit. Yes, there was a dip in the GCSE mathematics results last year, but all children are different, and it might well be that one year's cohort of students is not as successful as another's. What concerns me is that a couple of inspectors pop into a school for a day and a half, watch parts of a number of lessons, tick a few boxes, have a few chats, and then pronounce on a category for the school. The teachers who teach there, the parents who send their children there, the children who study there, they all know whether Perrins is good or outstanding. Bernard Tucker, Basingstoke Road, Old Alsford.
Winchester City Council must buy and reserve land bank. Sir, it is quite clear Winchester City Council's house building policies and strategy are in complete and total disarray. Arguments within council about the administration and organisation of the current tiny piecemeal schemes are being compounded by a total lack of leadership, vision and commitment to long-term delivery. This is happening when there is encouragement to take advantage of less restrictive borrowing and engage with the construction industry to create jobs, create homes, and promote growth. Winchester City Council needs a comprehensive review of all brownfield and greenfield land where council homes could be built. Purchasing and reserving such a land bank matched with a house building and development scheme, will go a long way to address the shortage of socially affordable quality homes for those on the waiting list. Current inadequate planning is not sufficient. It is possible, but without leadership, vision, a strategy for growth and economic development, and a long-term commitment, it will not happen. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
River Park decision is so short-sighted. Sir, the City Council is right in its decision to replace River Park Leisure Centre, but most definitely wrong in what it intends to replace it with, and more arguably wrong in its location. It appears what is planned is a like-for-like replacement. That is so short-sighted. We know a 25-metre pool cannot meet current demand, never mind for the next 25 years. And it is just spin to defend a weak decision by implying that the much-enhanced facility proposed by Winchester Fit for the Future is about provision for elite athletes. Its proposal provides for all levels. A flexible 50-metre pool, for example, would provide for competitive swimmers, but would also meet the unmet demand for pool time for leisure swimming. The economic argument against a better and larger facility made in your editorial is bordering on the facile. The cost is a one-off capital sum, exactly the type of investment the government is supporting to help address the recession, not something to be avoided because of it. Now is the right time to borrow with extremely low interest rates. There would be no recurrent cost to the council taxpayer, as the facility would at least cover its costs. The benefit of Bar End is to make a new sports centre more accessible. Detailed studies by Winchester Fit for the Future and by at least one interested developer have shown that there is plenty of space there for a bigger centre. It is good that Councillor Wood has invited suggestions for other facilities and that the size of the sports hall and the pool will be subject to further consideration. I support Councillor Evans' call for a public meeting to address options. The one held at the Theatre Royal on Barton Farm a few years back was a good example of such participative democracy. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to do something visionary, to address what are very poor sports facilities for an affluent city. It is disappointing in the extreme to see all political parties failing to grasp the nettle. Tommy Geddes, Stony Lane, Week.
Reservations about cutting road verges is the slightly punning heading for a letter from John Gallien of Perrins Close, Salford. Sir, I must disagree with some of Councillor Sean Woodward's views on verge cutting. That's letters on July 11th. I had reasons to travel the A31 in June from Salford to Winchester. I was surprised to find that both outer carriageways, east and westbound, were closed. Thinking there was major roadworks, I was surprised to find an array of vehicles and numerous workers decimating the central reservation. The cost, which must have run into thousands, follows the same procedure carried out recently from the Percy Hobbs roundabout to the Shepherd and Flock roundabout at Farnham, some 20 miles of which appears to be mown fields. Continuing my journey through Surrey into Kent and East Sussex, the central reservations were covered in wild grasses and flowers and remained uncut, although they may have been cut in March or April. I recently travelled through Wiltshire, Somerset and Devon, and it was a treat to see that their reservations were also left to grow wild. So why not Hampshire? I suspect it is to make everything neat and tidy. Drivers do appreciate the 1 metre cut on verges and growth cut back at junctions and central reservations, crossovers and road signs. But why do Councillor Woodward and the Highways Authority think I need to see the traffic on the other side of a dual carriageway? John Gallien, Perrins Close, Salford.
Now a letter from Keith Storey, St Cross Road, Winchester, under the heading "Each development is a stepping stone." Sir, wind and solar power are just some of the threats to our countryside. In saying a power station at Bullington Cross will be used to justify Mitchell Devon New Town, I am not being mischievous. Letters, July 11. but voicing a logical sequence of events. Each development is a stepping stone to the next. Building 2,000 homes on Barton Farm will set a precedent for developing other farmland along Andover Road. Indeed, the Barton Farm scheme will generate the next generation of people wanting more homes around Winchester and elsewhere. What next? The curious diversion of Andover Road through Barton Farm Estate will prove unworkable for handling both existing and new traffic from Barton Farm Worthy Down developments. This will create demand for a western bypass from Three Maids Hill roundabout, passing around Littleton, crossing Stockbridge Road and Sarum Road, connecting with Romsey Road near Pitt Manor and thence to the M3. Developers are already targeting green gaps between Hairstock and Littleton. It is no coincidence the council has already moved Winchester's boundary sign on Stockbridge Road further west, beyond the turn to Littleton. Infilling on the western boundary would include land along Sarum Road, which has recently been bought by a developer, the mothballed Greater Pitt Scheme and Bushfield Camp. I've seen the city's population grow from 30,000 to about 50,000. On present trends, it will be between 80,000 and 100,000 within 30 years. Growth won't stop while establishment groups want it to grow, these being the Church of England, Winchester College, University of Winchester, Hants County Council, Winchester City Council and retail organisations. Only those who want to maintain some quality of life and a rare English jewel of a small cathedral city in a historic green landscape setting should worry.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. But I should just say that if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we move on to historical items, and we're going back to 100 years. Nikki.
100 years ago, July the 26th, 1913. Alresford Rural District Council. Colonel Stratton Bates inquired whether it could be arranged for the men who collected house refuse in Alresford to also collect the paper which was so often blowing about the streets. The state of the streets in Alresford was most discreditable. Anyone passing through what ought to be a very pretty little town must be very much struck by its untidiness. It was largely due to the way in which some of the tradesmen unpacked their goods. They did it outside their premises, threw the paper into the streets, and there it was blowing about for days. He had travelled about a good deal, and in its outward appearance, Alresford was probably one of the dirtiest towns he knew. And the second item, women's suffrage, the pilgrimage to London. In connection with the rendezvous today in London of members of the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies from all parts of Great Britain, the pilgrims, as they were termed, from Bournemouth, the New Forest and Southampton, being part of the Portsmouth Road contingent, who joined forces at Guildford, spent Sunday in Winchester. They halted at Shawford and St Cross on Saturday evening, holding meetings of about an hour each in support of the women's suffrage movement.
Now we move on to 50, or move back to 50 years ago, July the 27th, 1963, and the item is headed Eastgate Street Flats Debate. In a meeting on Wednesday night, remarkable for the amount of time devoted to subjects of perhaps little interest to the general body of ratepayers, Winchester City Council somewhat paradoxically dealt with, in less than half an hour, what is probably its most important project this year. The time taken to finally give the green light to the oft-debated Eastgate Street flats was less than half that occupied by a discussion on two houses in Kingsgate Street, the future appearance of which is hardly likely to arouse controversy among any but the most zealous of the city's preservationists.
And now, 25 years ago, 22nd July 1988, care groups overwhelmed. Hampshire care groups say they are turning into taxi services due to increased demands on their time, brought about through the proposed introduction of charges to the hospital car service. Members of the Winchester and Central Hampshire Community Health Council, meeting in Alresford on Monday evening, heard that well-established groups like the one in Alton said they were thinking of closing down because they could not cope with the number of requests for transport. Members heard a decision on the controversial proposals for the charges had been delayed until the next meeting of Winchester Health Authority in September.
And I've got a snapshot from the past. Excuse me. A black and white photograph of a huge pile of coins being pushed off the bar of a pub. And it's Bell in Pennies toppled. This is from the Hampshire Chronicle, August the 13th, 1971, which is just a few months before decimalisation came in and decimal coinage. One of the most lucrative sources of income for various charities for many years have been the huge pile of pennies which adorned many public house and hotel counters. Now the profitable source will practically dry up with the cessation of pennies. On Tuesday evening at the Bell Inn St Cross Winchester, where the licensees Frank and Ina Barter have been enthusiastic supporters of the Spastics for many years, their pile was toppled over by one of their oldest customers, Mr Ted Cole. A count-up revealed that £28, 3 shillings and 4 pence in old coinage was in the pile, and Mr Arthur Back kept a promise he made a long time ago to double this amount. Together with proceeds from a competition, the sum raised was the excellent total of £61.60, and Mr E.G. Willamant, chairman of the Winchester and District Spastic Society, thanked Mr and Mrs Barter, Mr Back and all the Bell customers who so generously contributed towards this magnificent sum. And now we're going to move on to Chronicle Comment. Nikki, please.
Which is headed The Epitome of Public Service. Two events on Monday, seemingly unconnected. The march to Winchester of the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, the birth of London, in London of the Prince of Cambridge. One obvious connection is that the regiment, formed in 1992, is named after the baby's grandmother, Diana. But what also connects the two is the way they bring together people of all ages, races, religions and class. There has always been and always will be a republican strain in British life, but the obvious popularity of the royal family makes it highly unlikely this country will get rid of the institution for decades, if ever. The crowds in Winchester show too the deep-rooted respect and affection for the armed forces, men and women, who are prepared to put their lives at risk to defend our values. All our fathers, grandfathers and great-grandfathers did the same in World Wars I and II. Amid the flag-waving, there is recognition, perhaps unconscious for many, of the enduring idea of public service. Some people in this cynical 21st century find it easy to scoff at the idea. But what we saw on Monday at the march in Winchester High Street and with the royal couple in London was the epitome of service.
Thank you. And now we move on to first person. Graham.
Thank you. Judith Hennigan writes first person this week, entitling it Brevity is a Powerful Survival Strategy. The children are scattering like sand for the summer, with friends, jobs, festivals and expeditions pulling them in different directions. My daughter is somewhere in Slovakia, interrailing with friends. She stays in touch, texting most days from a bar or a hostel or a train, a sentence or two, sometimes three, if the train is noisy and she can't sleep. It's not much. It wouldn't fill a postcard. But I know she's safe and happy. I'm a slow texter myself. Short messages, in my view, take the longest to compose. Tweets are even trickier. There's little time for nuance, just I love this or I hate that, instead of, well, I'm not yet totally convinced, so let's unpick it a bit, which doesn't leave much change from 140 characters. Communication is reduced to sound bites and exclamations. Bah, humbug, I mutter, as I chomp on my figurative pencil. Recently, however, I was asked to edit a volume of letters from the 1950s between two lovers on opposite sides of the Atlantic. They're charming, full of longing and doodles in the margins and thoughts you can't easily express in a text. But they are also full of the writer's frustrations. The letters take weeks to arrive, and in the meantime, the world and their feelings move on. Telegrams were reserved for births and deaths. If only they'd had instant messaging. After all, most of us are fickle, by nature or necessity. We change our minds several times in an hour. Gone are the days of fixing a time and place and sticking to it because we had no other option. Now we just text to say, I'm running late, or I've had a better offer, or tweet, woo-hoo, hash-waving, whilst favouriting the latest episode of The Top of the Lake. Brevity is a powerful survival strategy. Get to the point, cut to the chase. Why use a sentence when you can use an acronym? Don't children develop wit and quick thinking from texting and social media? I save their pithiest texts and admire the way they read between the characters, remaking the language that is both clear and coded. They are masters of the mot juste. They are expert multitaskers. Of course, some of us worry about what is lost as well as what is gained. The energy to sustain a lengthy paragraph, not always choosing the short word over a longer one. Old-fashioned qualities such as patience and concentration and, well, apostrophes. Today, though, I want to send my eldest son a message. He's leaving for a month on a survey ship in the North Sea. 15 years ago, I'd have worried about where to send a letter. Now I just hope he'll have a signal. I take out my phone and stare at it for a bit, and then I tap in three characters. XXX.
Thank you. Now there's a couple of items from our Belgara, Malby.
Yes, the first is under the heading Phil Files a Few Forgotten Facts About Winchester. Belgarum's recent piece on a hidden secret of Winchester has prompted local historian Phil Yates to compile a list of his own. Winchester was the first town in the country to have a public library. It was, in fact, known as the Winchester Public Library and Museum and opened on November the 10th, 1851, following the Public Libraries and Museums Act of 1850. Where was it? In the Governor's House of the Old Jail in Jury Street, which is now part of the Old Jailhouse Pub. The prison had moved 2 years previously to Romsey Road, where it is today. The City Museum in the Square was one of the first purpose-built museums outside London and opened in 1903. The Ritz Cinema in Middle Brook Street, now the Winchester Family Church, was the last cinema to be completed before the outbreak of the Second World War. In fact, building works had commenced in 1939, prior to September the 3rd, and for a while it was uncertain whether the premises would be completed. They were, and the cinema finally opened in April 1940, with the full-length cartoon film of Gulliver's Travels. The following week saw the classic film The Wizard of Oz, starring Judy Garland, being screened. An organ was due to be installed, but never arrived. The place where the pipes should have gone are still there today. Winchester is possibly the only town in the country where a cinema has become a church, and a church a cinema. The Everyman Cinema in Southgate Street was built in 1850 as the garrison church to serve Peninsula Black Barracks. The Theatre Royal in Jury Street is the last cine variety theatre in the country in its original state, still in use today. This theatre, described by historians as one of the prettiest little theatres in the south of England, celebrates its 100th anniversary, August 24th, 2014. Watch this space for information on the centenary year celebrations. And the second item, Fiddler's standout performance is a crowd pleaser. In a high street as crowded as Winchester's, it's often hard for a busker to stand out. But this fiddler literally did so, balancing, as shown in the photograph, and I'll come to that in a moment, on a tightrope on one leg while performing for the crowds flocking the pedestrian precinct. Belgarum thought about approaching him to congratulate him on his talent and his chutzpah, but didn't want to bowl him over with praise. And there's this photograph of the fiddler with his fiddle, wearing a red top hat, on a tightrope. It says a tightrope, but the rope is bowing under his weight, and he's standing there on one leg. It's the shoppers walk by the Buttercross. Quite an incredible photograph.
Thank you, and that concludes those parts. So now we move on to items of general news. Nikki.
And this one I couldn't resist. A photograph of the most beautiful tiger in its pool. Obviously clear water, because you can actually see its legs showing through, with the longest whiskers you've ever seen, looking up at the camera. And the heading is, "It ain't half hot, Mum. Even tropical animals need to keep cool in the heat wave." Marwold Wildlife's new tiger, Kushka, has been enjoying her pool while these snow leopard cubs, which I haven't told you about yet, didn't have the best timing, perhaps, when they chose to emerge into the sweltering heat wave. The trio had been taking their first steps at the Winchester Zoo, even though their thick furry coats are more suited to the barren peaks of Central Asia. At least the cubs know nothing different. The 12-week-old triplets are enjoying exploring their surroundings, climbing rocks, play fighting, and chasing Mum Irina. Elsewhere, lemurs were given ice cream as they cooled off in the shade. And the three little snow leopard cubs are obviously of a very pale fur, poking out of their cave with very grumpy, cross faces. I don't think I'd want to meet them on a walk very much.
Sometimes being retro is also a bit topical, and Keith Hamilton is investigating local place names in this article that he calls Looking Back, and it's headed Hardy's Revival of Wessex Name. There are several areas of Hampshire which defy definition, but which nevertheless have a strong regional character. Yet none has an origin so romantic, so shrouded in mystery, and so much a subject of controversy as Wessex. This part of England enjoys a double distinction in having served its regional apprenticeship under an illustrious king in the 9th century, and then having been dragged out of retirement in order to serve the geographical needs of a famous novelist in the 19th century. During the intervening 1,000 years, Wessex lost its regional significance, so there's little doubt that much of the popularity which the name enjoys must stem from Thomas Hardy's revival of it, rather than King Alfred's association with the area. The origins of the name of Wessex was just one subject for discussion at the meeting of the British Association for the Advancement of Science, held in Southampton almost half a century ago, in 1964. According to one paper presented to the gathering, the author said, "The series of novels I projected, being mainly of the kind called local, seems to require a territorial definition of some sort to lend unity to their scene. Finding that the area of a single county did not afford a canvas large enough for this purpose, and that there were objections to an invented name, I disinterred the old one. The region designated was known but vaguely, and I was often asked by educated people where it lay. However, the press and the public were kind enough to welcome the fanciful plan and willingly joined me in the anachronism of imaging a Wessex population living under Queen Victoria. Since then, the name which I had thought to reserve to the horizons and landscapes of a partly real, partly dreamlike county has by degrees solidified into a utilitarian region which people can visit." Other Hampshire places owe their derivation from languages and historical events lost in the mists of time, although one town, New Milton, owes its name to a shopkeeper. There is a delightful picture of New Milton Village in 1925. The town's railway station had opened in 1888 with the common name of Milton, which did cause some confusion. So the railway adopted the name by which a Mrs. Newhook distinguished her sub-post office from an earlier establishment in the old village centre. One estate agent's brochure at the time even tried to foist the name Milton by the Sea on the district. Nearby, the owner of estates in Milford reverted to the Domesday Book, calling it Meliford on Sea. Like the name Montague Town for Buckler's Hard, these last two suggestions did not receive popular support, and the latter is now Milford-on-Sea. This addition of On-Sea has mainly been added since the end of the First World War to the names of many coastal resorts anxious to attract visitors. Since the Second World War, the hamlet of Enham, near Andover, has become Enham Alamein. And in such ways as this, place names continue to mirror the history of both Hampshire and the rest of the country.
Get your hair cut. And there's no excuse now, because there's an article here about a new barber's. A Winchester City Centre shop is set to be transformed into a barber shop. Jaggard Baker and London Clancy have let 25 City Road, which is pictured, to Headcase Barbers on a 10-year lease. The quoting rent was £10,000 per annum exclusive. The property attracted considerable interest from several hairdressing users, and a deal was eventually struck with Headcase Barbers. Jim Sawyer of London Clancy said, "This new letting is helping to enhance the area where the City Council is looking at schemes for improvement."
Sparshoved celebrations. It was a perfect day to start the rest of their lives. Hundreds of students graduated from Sparshoved College at a ceremony at Winchester Cathedral. Proud parents came from all over the country to celebrate their children's achievements. College principal Tim Jackson said, "The past academic year has been another highly successful one for the college. Many of our students are already in employment, often hundreds of miles from Winchester, and many overseas. There are more than 30 of the courses today with 100% pass rates, which says a great deal about the combined effort of students and their tutors. Students experienced a mix of emotions at their time, as their time at Sparshoved came to an end." Billy Haddon, 24, an aquaculture student, said, "This is the end of an era for me. It's the last time I will see some really good friends, but it's a good feeling to have finished, and I'm proud." The ceremonies were attended by guests of honour, the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs. And there are some more wonderful photographs, particularly one where you have the fisheries students all kneeling, about 30 of them, on the ground, throwing their mortarboards up into the air, within the background, Winchester Cathedral. Beautiful photograph. And then you have one of Rachel Collinson and Hayley Scott, looking very glamorous with dark glasses, mortarboards and their capes, I think they're called. And the Conservation of Wildlife students all celebrating, smiling there, mixed bunch. And one here of Jordan Abbott, Jessica Bullen, Ashley James, Jennifer Well and Lauren Miller, all with their arms linked, with Ashley James in the middle, sort of holding them together, all in front of the cathedral, and they are celebrating their foundation degree in animal management. And I missed another one. Equine science graduates Kevin Dorning and Jade Payne, and he appears to be carrying her in his arms for some reason, but they look very pleased with their awards.
Not surprisingly, we have an article about a baby being born, another baby being born. There are two photographs. One is a baby shower. Staff and locals at the King's Head in Hursley celebrate the birth of the royal baby as manager Jim Hagiantoni sprays the champagne. And the other photograph is of Terry Hayter and Jim Bone with their own baby, Scarlett, saying it's a special day for Terry and Jim as the nation celebrates. As temperatures soared and the paparazzi scrambled, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge stepped outside to show the world a future king. One person who knew how the Duchess was feeling was Bishop Stoke mum Terry Hayter, who's 23. At Winchester Maternity Unit, she was recovering from giving birth to Scarlett, born the same day as the royal arrival on Monday, weighing 7 pounds, 4 ounces. 9 babies from across the district were born at the RHCH and will forever share their birthday with the Prince of Cambridge. Miss Hayter, a carer, said, "This is our first child, so we're elated. It's just like an adrenaline rush at the moment. It's fun to think that she shares a birthday with the future king." The baby's father is Jim Bone, who's 32, and he's a roofer from Bishopstoke. Miss Hayter added, "We found out that we get a medallion because she had been born on the same day, but we have to apply for it." Meanwhile, at the King's Head in Hursley, manager Jimmy Hagilan Antoni cracked some bubbly for his customers to wet the baby's head in style. He said, "This is great news. I'm absolutely delighted for them. They're a great couple, and I hope they can savour it all." He added, "I was always going to be a boy, and with our name being what it is, we would definitely mark the birth in some other way, either by creating a dish or a cocktail named after the new arrival."
Baking road surfaces are given a dusting. They are a common sight on Hampshire's roads during the winter months, but shocked drivers could not believe their eyes as a fleet of gritters were on the country's roads as they basked in 30 degrees centigrade, 86 degrees Fahrenheit temperatures. They were sent out to protect melting surfaces by dusting the roads as the heatwave continued. County highways chiefs are calling for motorists to report any roads where the surface has become sticky. It comes as heavy traffic is predicted on Hampshire's roads as many begin the school summer holidays. The County Council's Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Sean Woodward, said, "While this hot weather is a welcome change from the usual English summer, it does have the potential to cause us some difficulties." The County Council and its maintenance contractor, AMI, are monitoring road surfaces and dusting those that cause concern with crushed aggregate. Most of the roads in Hampshire are surfaced in bitumen-based materials. Although durable, in very hot weather, the road surface temperature can reach more than 45 degrees centigrade, 112 degrees Fahrenheit, and this can, on occasion, cause bitumen to soften and rise to the surface. "We will continue to monitor Hampshire's highways and take action where necessary." A spokesman from the Highways Agency, which looks after motorways and major trunk roads such as the A31, said at the time of going to press, "There have been no instances of road surfaces melting anywhere on the Highways Agency network in the current hot weather. Call 0845 603 5633 to report a sticky road surface." That's 0845 603 5633.
Warning over increased risk of dehydration. Health experts are urging people to drink more as the heat wave continues. They warn that if people do not drink enough in hot weather, they could become dehydrated, which can lead to serious illness and death. It is important because the body uses water to keep itself at the perfect temperature for organs to work by sweating when it's too hot. If a person is unable to sweat because they are dehydrated, the body's core temperature will rise and fatigue will set in as their muscles and circulation will begin to slow down. If the core temperature continues to rise, the body will start to shut down, leading to heat stroke and organ failure. Those who are most at risk include the elderly, babies and young children, people with an existing medical issue, and those who are unable to say that they are thirsty. Solent NHS Trust Medical Director Dr. Tony Snell said, "When you're getting to the point of heat exhaustion, it's very serious. Dehydration is part of the problem with heat stroke. The main issue is the body's inability to maintain its normal core temperature. If you get dehydrated, it adds to the problem because the circulation begins to fall. Therefore, blood doesn't get to the skin. Therefore, heat exchange to the air doesn't happen. Therefore, your core temperature rises and that can lead to heat stroke. Southampton General Hospital consultant urological surgeon Bhaskar Kumar Simani said, "In hot weather, the fluid intake should increase. Urine should be clear or pale instead of a dark or yellow colour." Age UK Director General Michelle Mitchell said, "In the hot weather, we are all susceptible to dehydration, though as we age, we can become less able to quickly sense we are thirsty and the kidneys can function less well. Anyone with an older family member or neighbour can help by calling in to check to see if they're okay and if they need help in taking reasonable precautions to stay well in the hot weather." And another item, Coast Guards have warned people to stay safe in the water after revealing the number of rescues in Hampshire has shot up since the heatwave arrived. Between June 15 to July 16, Coast Guards dealt with 2,859 incidents off the county's coastline, an increase of 668, 23%, on the same period last year. There are fears the figures could rise even further as schools break up for summer and families head to the coast to cool off. And here is another little bit. Tips to avoid dehydration. 1. Avoid alcohol and caffeine drinks. Drink lots of cold drinks, especially water and fruit juice. Adults should drink fizzy drinks as they help replace salt and sugars lost in sweat. Eat normally, but try to have more salads and fruit which contain water. Stay out of the sun between 11 and 3. Stay in the shade and wear sunscreen, loose-fitting clothing, a hat and a light scarf. Open windows at night when the temperature has dropped. Never leave babies, elderly people or pets alone in parked cars.
Hastily having a drink of water from my glass. Another another recurring theme for this item, which is housing development in Winchester. It's called Residents View Plans for Green Gap Homes. More than 100 people turned out to air their views on a proposed housing development in the north of Winchester. At stake is 18 acres of green gap land off Harestock Road near Littleton, and a public consultation was held at Henry Beaufort School to present two options. The presentation from Paul Buckley of Winchester-based architects Snug Projects showed a, quote, character-led, unquote, proposal of 35 homes, contrasting with a density-led alternative of 71 homes. He said that the Welsh family who own the land are offering to keep up to 70% of the site as open space. He said the most important message is that this is a rare and generous type of development. It will be very easy for the Welsh family to not allocate any land to the community and push for greater density. That's exceptionally generous. An impromptu vote orchestrated by Mr. Bulkley suggested residents are split down the middle on whether the site should be developed into a mix of open space, community facilities and housing, or whether it should be developed at all. They voted 30 in favour of some kind of development, 28 against, he said. Increased traffic was a major concern for many of those attending, although Mr. Bulkley insisted the increase resulting from the development would be negligible. Peter North, aged 49, of Fromond Road, is chairman of the Wick Community Association. He said, "I'm not convinced that traffic won't increase. They can quote all the stats they like, but since Aldi and Waitrose opened stores, traffic in Harestock and Stony Lane has proved that that's not the case." The meeting also heard that both schemes would provide 3 football pitches, a converted barn as a community facility, and some green space. There was debate at what would be the best use of community space with scant support for the football pitches. But Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine said, "One thing I know is that there is a need for football pitch provision. But if the community feel there is enough in there for them, they will support it anyway. This is real community-led planning. Pat Mayer, chairman of the North Winchester Community Planning Group for St Barnabas and Harestock, said, "This is the chance we have been waiting for. It's an opportunity for a community facility for this area. But Tamar Sutton, who is 47, of Chestnut Avenue, said, "Keeping the open space would be more of a benefit than community facilities. I think the beauty of this place is the natural beauty. Why build on it?" Landowner Simon Welsh said the family had previously turned down an offer of £1.6 million from developers for an option on the land because they wanted to maintain a say in its future. "In a way, this is a legacy for us. When our dad died, we moved out, but we maintained the land. We were blessed to grow up here. All that green space was our play area," he said.
And now an article which has a wonderful photograph of five Eastleigh College students surrounding a magnificent model of a black bull that they've built. The bull stands some 5 feet high, about 10 feet long, and about 3 feet wide. Big display of white horns. Looks magnificent. Creative students have helped to beef up Hampshire Festival by providing a colourfully decorated bull. Traditionally, a bull is used to lead Mardi Gras parades, so Eastleigh College students wanted to come up with their own version for the town's extravaganza in September. Eastleigh Mardi Gras organiser Chris Thomas said, "The bull looks fantastic, and we are very grateful to the college for building it for us. The 5 feet design will take pride of place at the front of the parade on September the 14th and 15th, and it will move on wheels which are set under each of the four hooves." Really is a fantastically looking beast.
And this is MP hands out awards to scouts, and there's a picture of all the scouts in their green uniforms and their red and yellow scarves, and behind are some older scouts with their white shirts and shorts and various things. But what's quite funny, sort of in the middle of all this group, there's a sort of furry bear with its tongue, full-size, man-sized bear with his tongue sticking out. It just makes a very amusing picture, which, anyway. Winchester scouts gathered for an evening of fun underpinned by a serious message on Monday. At their Pinsent camp site on Tegdown, MP Steve Bryan handed out four Silver Chief Scouts Awards to cubs from the 3rd Winchester, the Worthies, Scout Group. But the youngsters, backed up by their mascot, this is it, Chip the Beaver, grabbed the opportunity to drive home their message that scouts must benefit from the Barton Farm development. Cub Scout Millie Chilcott, 10, and Explorer Scout Alex King, 17, briefed the MP on their recent meeting with civic chiefs at the Forum, which meets regularly to discuss the developments of Barton Farm. District Commissioner Stephen Parker estimates that 800 children, 40% of the 2,000 expected to live at Barton Farm, will want to be scouts. Following a tour of the site for Mr. Bryan, there was a grand howl by the cubs of the 3rd Winchester, the Worthies, and the Silver Chief Scouts were awarded to Jack Thorne, Oliver Bryan, Samuel Murphy and Liam Kierans. Oliver Bryan and his 6th team also received prizes for winning the District Camp Challenge in June.
Not housing development, but development of the River Park Leisure Centre. And there is a photograph of that building. More consultation has been called for on plans to improve Winchester's River Park Leisure Centre. Council leader Keith Wood has already stated the preferred option is to demolish and rebuild the existing complex, following a consultancy report into sport and recreational needs. Speaking at a full council last Wednesday, Councillor Simon Cook said an independent scrutiny group should be set up to assess the future of the centre. Councillor Robert Hutchinson added, Winchester Town Forum should also have a consultation meeting on the matter. But Councillor Wood said a cross-party working group has already been set up to complete that task and would report in September. He said, I'm hoping to come to the Cabinet meeting with a proposal for what that working party has recommended as to where the leisure centre should be, what it should consist of, and how it should be procured. I'm anxious to move this on because I do not want events to overtake us and to get to a stage where something nasty happens in the existing centre and we have to spend a lot of money repairing the plant or the roof. Councillor Jane Rutter added it was important the full council had the chance to scrutinise the eventual plan rather than Cabinet making a decision itself. She said, I have been concerned that decisions have been made without being discussed by the whole council. The problem with the Cabinet is that it makes decisions on its own and we just have to rubber stamp them. We shall all have an opportunity to tell you what we think. The consultancy was originally budgeted at £50,000, but the actual cost was £17,500. Councillor Cook added, I was about to be outraged at the original £50,000 cost, but the £17,500 figure is a great encouragement.
A Winchester primary school has said farewell to its head teacher at its summer fair. Lorraine Smith is leaving Weston Primary School in full flood after 11 years, but the school community gave her a rousing send-off. There was a farewell presentation and a balloon launch amid glorious sunshine. Among the gifts was one that Mrs. Smith gave to the school, a stunning sculpture of a dragon that stands in the Dragon's Den playground. By many accounts, it was Weston's best ever summer fair. And there are three photographs, one of Lorraine Smith in the centre, smiling away, and surrounded by colleagues from the school, all saying goodbye. Another photograph of the pupils presenting a gift to Lorraine. And the third photograph, again, a smiling Lorraine Smith with the dragon sculpture.
On the path to a safer school route, Kingsworthy Primary School is celebrating the completion of a long-awaited pathway after a 10-year campaign. Children, parents and school governors officially opened it with the help from Mascot, Rio the Bird, another enormous yellow and red bird person, above of the Walk to School Week campaign. County Councillor and School Governor Jackie Porter secured funds from Hampshire County Council to build it, supporting a campaign by mothers and school governors, Charlotte Smith and Sue Tinkler. Head teacher Julie Mullane said she hoped the path would have a positive impact on reducing traffic and encouraging pupils to walk, cycle or scoot to school. And there is a lovely picture of them parading along the new path and all the littler children are sitting on the ground watching and the bigger children with enormous Rio the Bird are showing off the new path.
I've had many photographs, and so here's some. There are the Curdridge Country Show. And the first one is Lewis Cousins, who's aged 10, on something called the Cracker, C-R-A-C-A, Cracker Croc Stall. And he's holding a ball of some density, about to throw it, obviously, to break some crockery. And then there's two guys, Chicago Nine, they're called, performing. There's Ben Newell and his daughter Hazel, who's one, and on his shoulders with a very apt sun hat, protection from the sun. And mother and daughter, Liz Evans and Holly Eastlake. And then in the middle, there's Charlie Blogg, who's nine, and he's on the climbing wall, doing it barefoot, and looks as if he's gone quite a way, and he's certainly very determined. And lastly, the pipe band drummers, Digby Wallace, David White and Charles Gray. It says they're taking a back seat, but the interesting thing is that they are sitting down, looking to camera, and the camera, the photograph, has been shot between the legs of, obviously, another drummer who is standing with legs astride in front of them. It's a very fetching shot. And at last, the Kurdridge Country Show, it says, had some good luck. The sun shone last Saturday after wet weather washed out the event last year and hit preparations in 2011. Between 6,000 and 7,000 people attended the traditional show at Reading Room Lane, and crowds enjoyed the horticultural tent for the vegetable, flower and produce contests, Morris dancing, falcon displays and the St Andrew's Pipe Band, a vintage car parade, pony rides and a dog show. A new feature this year was a music stage with local acts Jerry Williams, the Dogwood Flowers, Winters Hill and Chicago Nine. Professional event organiser Tony Bunday, who in the past has organised the Southampton Passion, said the show went brilliantly. Another bad year may have affected morale, and there have been concerns about getting volunteers and getting them enthused, he said. It's a community event that brings everyone together. The music stage was new. We wanted to do something for younger people. Traditional country shows are not the most attractive for young people, but the music attracted a complete cross-section. Elaine Flower, who chairs the show committee, said, "This year was just so wonderful. We had a complete week of good weather, so it was much more relaxed. There are only 1,200 villagers, and we had 200 volunteers. It's a community event and brings together an awful lot of people to do something for charity. It's really hard work, but it's fun as well. Proceeds will go to the Reading Room, Kurdridge's Village Hall."
Staff just loving clearing up the city's streets. Winchester's McDonald branch is doing its bit for the environment. Volunteers from the fast food restaurant on St George's Street picked up litter as part of a Hampshire-wide campaign to get the streets clean. Managers hope the clean-up will encourage members of the local community to take responsibility for keeping their neighbourhood litter-free and take pride in their local environment. And there's a photograph accompanying the article showing four members of the staff of McDonald's branch with their litter bins and the McDonald's M sign on them, all wearing their orange jackets and shouldering their pincer tools with which they pick up the litter, standing outside the Winchester Cathedral.
A short one. Daniel and family thank firefighters. The family of the boy impaled on a spike have visited firefighters who rescued him to thank him for their work. Daniel Howie, 13, was impaled on the railing for half an hour before the fire crew cut away the spikes in Hatherley Road full flood. Crew manager Richard North of Winchester Fire Station said Daniel, his mum, brother and a friend visited the station. They popped in to say hello. It was fantastic. One of the slightly unsatisfactory parts of the job is you spend the time helping people but don't find out any more. He is out of hospital and doing well, so it's very rewarding. He's incredibly lucky. The spike couldn't have got any closer to vital organs.
Found some more photographs. It's the Mayor of Winchester starting the pace, setting the pace at a city triathlon. And there's kayak. Yes, they're very tiny kayaks. Kayak racing, there's cycles, and there's obviously some runners as well. That's the triathlon. And it raised, there are 400 competitors. They battled through the blazing heat to raise £15,000 for Macmillan Cancer Support, and it's called Pedal Paddle Race, and it attracted 428 athletes for the triathlon that started and finished at Winchester on Sunday. The Mayor, Ernie Jeffs, had started the cycle race from the Guildhall before the competitors headed for Palmer's Field by the Itchen Navigation for the canoeing and running, or the canoes, well, the kayaks. Organiser Blair Dixon said the event started in 2004 and was growing in popularity. He said it was hugely successful. It was hot, but there were no problems. We had water stocks along the route. There was a great buzz around the event. The fastest man was Ed Gurney, a project manager from Winchester, who finished in 1 hour, 7 minutes and 29 seconds. Fastest woman was Sarah Davis, in 1 hour, 17 minutes and 56 seconds, that must be. The fastest team was the Bacon Rolls from Alsford, in 1 hour, 10 minutes and 30 seconds. And there are the two canoeists, and there's this huge mass of people waiting at the start while the mayor and Lady Mayoress raise the hand to start them off, which is written down in front of them. Start, it says, and they're all very enthusiastic to go. And a bunch of cyclists, and then a couple of ones who are obviously out in front, and a couple of runners.
County to raid savings to provide super-fast broadband. County bosses are aiming to shoot Hampshire into the Premier League of super-fast broadband by raiding council coffers. Its reserves have risen from £307 million in 2012 to £418 million last March, a hike of more than £100 million. Now Tory leader Roy Perry has announced plans to take a multi-million sum from savings to subsidise a private company to increase speeds across the county, on top of the £5 million of taxpayers' money already pledged. Councillor Perry told a meeting of the full council last Thursday the aim was to achieve 98% of households and businesses with minimum speeds of 24 megabits per second. MBPS by 2017. The plans are likely to be welcomed by business leaders, but unions and opposition councillors have called for reserves to head off cuts in frontline services and jobs. The county has already done a deal with BT Group to roll out superfast broadband to 90% of premises by 2015, up from 70% last year. The first premises will benefit in January next year. Under the current plans, the remaining 10% will be able to access broadband at speeds of less than 2 Mbps, the basic standard. But Councillor Perry said the Cabinet wanted to do more. He said, "With these proposals coming on top of the existing plans, we aim to put Hampshire at the very high end of coverage and performance criteria of any county in England. This will be one of the most significant investments we make in the life of the council for the benefit of young, old, families, rural, urban, learning and business." Council Perry said details were confidential for commercial reasons, but the aim was to be in the Premier League of broadband by 2017, beating the government target of 24 Mbps for 94% of households. He said, "This will be a new multi-million pound investment, but that is precisely what I think reserves are for, to invest in the future." His pledge comes after a National Audit Office report was highly critical of the Department of Culture, Media and Sport for its handling of the rollout of rural broadband. Hampshire will miss the target of 90% coverage of at least 24 megabits per second, MPBS, by May 2015, by 4 months, but other areas are running 2 years behind schedule, including the Isle of Wight. However, the county has insisted its plans are on track and offer outstanding value for money, with the lowest cost per premises of any area. In Hampshire, councils have put in £5 million for new infrastructure, a sum matched by the government with the remaining £3.8 million invested by BT.
Westminster Diary by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Some people believe MPs put their feet up each summer when Parliament is in recess, and some may even do that, but it's not really my style. For a start, I would drive Susie quite mad, and while we have the annual family holiday in Devon to look forward to next month, there's much to do, including my summer tour. It started this week with a phenomenally busy street surgery outside the Tesco Express store in Kingsworthy, and continued with meeting residents in Tegdown on Tuesday and a special drop-in surgery in St Cross on Friday. This Saturday morning sees a street surgery in South Wanston, and I will be outside the post office with local councillors. Please do stop if you're in the area. My previous tours have been really well received by constituents, and it's been a great way for me to get out and meet even more of the people I represent. This year's programme is certainly ambitious and spans the real length of my Winchester and Chandler's Ford constituency. It even includes a special supermarket surgery at Sainsbury's in Badger Farm next Wednesday, July the 31st at 2:30 p.m. Much has been written in this newspaper about the Winchester business community, and its unstinting support of the Winchester Business Excellence Awards is just one way we support the engine of our local economy. Another is the increasingly effective combination of our local councils, the Chamber and the Business Improvement District, BID. Last Friday, it was a pleasure to open the new Winchester Business Centre in Parchment Street and to see another dynamic, positive string to our bow. This is not just a building, it's a place where existing businesses can develop and where new start-ups can find their feet. Monday of this week saw the Freedom Parade of the Tigers, and it was an absolute privilege for me as the local MP to applaud the two battalions outside Winchester Guildhall. As someone whose grandfather served in the Royal Hampshire Regiment during World War II, it was sheer pride and thanks for what they do on our behalf. It was yet another fantastic Winchester occasion, and in spite of the heat, local people turned out to support it in their droves. Finally, for this time, our campaign to improve the nearby A33 junction at Kingsworthy was a hot topic of conversation at the nearby summer tour event this week, and it's very clear constituents from right across the area are backing my insistence that we need significant change to make this notorious spot safer.
Winchester's volunteers were praised at the annual general meeting of the recently merged Citizens Advice Bureau, the first AGM on Monday of Winchester District CAB, which was formed following the merger of the Winchester, Bishop's Waltham and Meon Valley CABs, and it discussed the challenging times that lay ahead. Chairman Susan Lambert referred to the 43 members of paid staff made redundant as a result of the merger, but added, "We have been providing a service every day." Guest speaker Councillor Robert Humby, Deputy Leader and Portfolio Holder for Economic Development at Winchester City Council, paid tribute to the CAB's volunteers and said, "The voluntary sector has thrived in the Winchester area. We know that the voluntary sector reaches people others cannot." Councillor Humby confirmed that the City Council would support volunteers, adding, "We can help ensure that you have access to the help you need. I look to the future of the sector with confidence. I give you my word I will do all I can to help you." When asked about segregated departments within the council, with claims that different departments must be contacted for any progress, Councillor Humby stated the council is moving to create one central point of contact. Plans were confirmed for a Winchester CAB website. CAB Chief Executive Jenny Meadows told the meeting, attended by more than 50 people at the United Church in Jury Street, "I started as a volunteer. I walked in and I ended up staying." Mrs. Meadows continued the praise of the voluntary sector, stating that Winchester District was one of the only CABs that helped develop volunteers to become advice supervisors, a role normally filled by paid employees. She said, "Volunteers are ambassadors for our service. We have, give or take, 100 volunteers, which equates to £444,844 of economic value." Winchester Mayor Ernie Jeff said, "I never cease to be amazed at the number of volunteers. I'd like to thank Jenny and the CAB for their services.
Pair found guilty of cruelty to animals. A Winchester couple have been banned from keeping animals after admitting cruelty. Eric and Karen Newton of Winnall Manor Road, Winnall, admitted a string of offences relating to the care of a cat and dog. Aldershot Magistrates' Courts heard. They were each fined £670 and banned for keeping animals for 5 years. They pleaded guilty to causing unnecessary suffering by failing to provide veterinary care, failing to protect animals from pain, suffering, injury and disease, and failing to provide a suitable environment. The City Council was alerted to the Newtons after a dog barking complaint in October last year. Animal Welfare Officer Emily Bowen and Principal Area Housing Manager Rachel Moreau discovered a tabby and white cat, Bailey, with a large untreated abscess on the side of its face and fleas all over its body. They also found a brindle crossbreed dog called Bear and a black Labrador called Scooby, both with chronic skin conditions causing itchiness and hair loss over the legs and body, together with red raw sores. The property was in a terrible state of cleanliness, the court heard. The animals were seized under the Animal Welfare Act 2006 and taken to a vet. Bear and Scooby's skin conditions were treated and cleared up, but Bear had not been socialised well enough in the initial year of his life. He was extremely difficult to handle, unpredictable and aggressive, and so vets decided it was best to put him to sleep. Bailey had an operation to remove the infected flesh and stitch up the skin where the abscess had been. He recovered fully and was rehomed. Scooby was placed into foster care until the trial, when the court made a deprivation order which allowed Winchester City Council to rehome him permanently. His new owners say they are delighted.
Hard shoulder to be used in peak periods. It is the news that thousands of Hampshire motorists have waiting for. Transport bosses have finally confirmed that hard shoulders on Hampshire's two busy motorways will be used to ease daily traffic misery for motorists. Tens of millions of pounds will be spent turning heavily used sections of the M27 and M23 into managed motorways. It means hard shoulders will be opened up for use during peak periods, while variable speed limits will help control the flow of traffic, similar to the M25 around London. Plans are being drawn up to roll out the scheme along the M27 between Junction 4 at Southampton Airport and Junction 11 at Fareham, as well as along the M3 between Junction 9 at Winchester and Junction 14 at Southampton. Electronic signs and gantry displays will instruct motorists when it is safe to use the hard shoulder and issue further instructions to drivers about lane closures and speed limits. The news was welcomed by transport and economic heavyweights as easing motorists' misery and a boost for business. The announcement was made by the Department of Transport as part of a £28 billion plan to breathe life into the nation's roads and rail infrastructure. Detailed plans are yet to be drawn up and consultation must still take place, but government bosses plan to start work by 2015. It will involve strengthening verges, installing road signs, CCTV cameras, speed monitoring technology and roadside safety points. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Sean Woodward, said he had suggested such a scheme 8 years ago, having seen the hard shoulder in operation on the M40. Welcoming the move, he said after millions were instead spent on extra lanes, this was the logical next step. He added the traffic is slow because of sheer volume, so if we can spread it to 8 lanes rather than 6, one would expect it would flow. He said traffic harms business if people do not have a predictable commute, and that delivery vehicles sat in queues and motorists missing business meetings can cost millions. In response to concerns about losing the hard shoulder for emergencies, Councillor Woodward said he would imagine that there would still be refuges on the side of the road, in addition to highway patrols and emergency telephones, though he added that drivers would have to be more vigilant. Nick Farthing, Chairman of the Planning and Transport Committee for the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, welcomed the plan as good for business generally if it freed up road capacity.
Winchester Floral Design Society's July meeting took place in St Faith's Parish Church, Parish Hall, rather, where Chairman Trish Spears thanked members for their contributions to the well-received display at the Cathedral's recent Flower Festival. The meeting saw a demonstration by Pam Welsh entitled Funky Festivals, and members were treated to a display depicting various worldwide occasions. The first was the Hornbill Festival, which takes place in Nagaland in India. Red roses were placed with variegated foliage, Craspedia, and yellow spray roses. Next was the Silk Road Festival, with a display using Gaikas leaves, Damascus palmera, and Germini Hawaii, all set on an Alibaba vase. The third design portrayed the Ati Ati Han Festival from the Philippines. White twigs alongside white larkspur formed a linear arrangement completed with Dendrobium orchids, Pittosporum, Aspidistra flowers alongside green hydrangeas. This was followed by a visit to Pacifica, New Zealand, and a joyful array of pink sonata and anthuriums with contrasting Schwarzwalder Kala lilies and green dianthus, skillfully finished off with Astralmeria Extreme. Lastly, displays depicting Tartan Day were arranged using heathery purples and blues by combining alliums, liatris, rimjims, rice flower and verbena at the base, and it is base. The competition for the Rose Bowl was won jointly by Jean Morris and Trish Spears. And there is a photograph of three happy ladies. Well, one of them is Pam Welsh, the demonstrator and presumably the judge, holding the Rose Bowl. And Jean Morris and Trish Spears, who look equally happy at receiving it after all their efforts with those very difficult names, which I wish I'd read before I started.
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. Please remember when you've finished with this week's recording to put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.